Welcome to Kingston Reid's Word to the Wise podcast series for HR and safety professionals.
Hi, I'm Alice DeBoos from Kingston Reid.
And I'm Krista Lennard.
And in this podcast, we are going to have a casual conversation about casuals and the implications of the federal court decision in WorkPac and Rosato. What we want to cover this afternoon are the big issues, just to try and get some understanding of the implication for current and for future casual employees. Why don't you get us started, Krista? We've obviously heard about WorkPac and Skeen, and a couple of years ago we were all talking about that case, or last year. What's the background to this new case?
Yeah, right. So WorkPac also had an employee by the name of Mr. Rosato, and Mr. Rosato's employment was not dissimilar to quite a number of other employees that WorkPac had employed that were working on a labour hire basis for a client. In this case, the client was Glencore. Now, Mr. Rosato had been employed as a casual employee. He had a period of employment that spanned from 2014 through to 2018. And as a casual employee, he was placed with Glencore and had a series of contracts. There were six contracts in total over that period of time. And basically, he was required to work wholly for Glencore through that period and comply with their rostering requirements and be at the direction of Glencore. Now, at the end of his employment, Alice, he made a series of complaints and alleged that he was, in fact, as a result of his employment with WorkPac, a permanent employee and not a casual employee. And following the decision in WorkPac and Skeen, WorkPac decided that they would seek a declaration from the federal court to try and distinguish Mr. Rosato's employment from that of the Skeen case. And so that's how we come to this case. And I think if we now break down sort of some of the issues, Alice, as to what the key takeouts of this case are, we can look at then perhaps what exactly is a casual employee and then delve into some of those issues.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a very long decision, but I think it actually can be broken down into to really two key pieces. And the reasoning on one then follows the other. And the first is, well, what exactly is a casual? And then once you've decided whether or not a person is in fact a casual employee, or in Mr. Rosato's case, the court decided that he was other than a casual employee, the question is, well, is that person then allowed to double dip on payments? And that's really where a lot of the attention lies with this decision, is around that second leg, that once you've found that someone is not in fact a casual, what do we do about the fact that we've already paid them in their hourly rate a number of key entitlements? And in looking at the first leg, is someone a casual? The court, I think, actually took quite a sensible position in reaffirming what has been the position for some time. That is that it doesn't really matter what you put in a contract. The assessment of whether an employee is casual or not will actually involve an analysis of the role at the time. I can write whatever I want in an employment contract. The law will actually look at what is that employee doing, how is he or she doing it, and how are the various obligations viewed at a point in time where the argument arises.
Right, and that relationship can change over time. What's interesting in this case was that the court was satisfied that Mr. Rosato was permanently, or had that essence of permanency from the commencement of his employment, but that won't always be the case. And it's very often the case that an employer will engage a casual with the full intention that they are ad hoc, that they're not permanent, but over time, due to us being creatures of habit, due to the employee being able and willing and indicating they're able to attend and work shifts, that they start to become regular and systematic in the way in which they're rostered on. And so whilst in this case, Alice, the court didn't address what happens or at what point do you stop becoming a casual and start becoming a permanent employee, and it wasn't necessary on the facts of this case, it's an interesting issue that employers are going to have to grapple with in terms of deciding what exactly is a casual and when somebody ceases to be a casual and when they become more permanent in the way that they're rostered. Are there some key indicators, Alice, aren't there, that,
yeah,
that can help employers decide that?
Yeah, and I think that the one that the court focused most heavily on, and I must say this was the one that was focused on in Skeen as well, is this idea of a firm advance commitment. So what the court is saying here is that if an employee has a firm advance commitment of work, it's hard to see how that employment could ever be casual. And what that means is if you are promising to use an employee and to pay for the service of an employee, and in turn the employee is promising to perform work for you, that means that there's some form of firm advance commitment. In the absence of that firm advance commitment, there's uncertainty, there's instability, and those types of states of being are more like casual employment. And that's really consistent with the recent full bench position as well, where they mused that simply the act of putting a casual employee into a roster indicated a firm advance commitment. And I really think that if a casual is now appearing in a roster, that's a firm advance commitment. You're saying at a point in time, you, Joe Bloggs, will be working on Wednesday at 10 p.m. That's a firm advance commitment.
That's right. And what, how that juxtaposed with the concept of a regular and systematic casual, which of course is a concept that's recognised under the Fair Work Act, and indeed, you know, enlivens if a regular and systematic casual has been employed for a duration, be it 6 or 12 months, depending on the size of the business, that enlivens an unfair dismissal entitlement, for instance. It's not irregular, and certainly not the case, you know, that you wouldn't necessarily have a roster that somebody is then, you know, rostered on to work for.
Yeah, and there's that idea that the other way to look at it is to say, well, if Joe Bloggs doesn't turn up on Wednesday, is that a problem? Mm. And if that is a problem, then he's less likely to be a casual employee, because for a true casual employee, that casual actually has the choice whether or not to turn up, because there's none of this reciprocal obligation and promise involved.
And reliance.
Yeah.
Can you envisage then a casual employee who does not have any firm advance commitment? I mean, what does that look like?
I think these days they're pretty few and far between, but they do exist. There are industries where there are casual pools of employees, and those employees will all ring up at 4 p.m., say, and they'll be told whether or not they have a shift for that evening. And if they don't ring up, then they don't get a shift. But if they do ring up, then they get told, yes, Joe, you can turn up for a shift. That's true casual employment. Or it could be very much for just a day-to-day involvement. But, you know, in my experience, I'm struggling, other than that first casual pool example, I'm struggling to think of too many employers that have true casual employees.
And you think about the case of Bed Bath & Table. Now, that, of course, was looking at an unfair dismissal case, and there was an employee who had been rostered on. She was a university student, as I recollect, and she'd been rostered on to work shifts over Christmas. And in that case, Bed Bath & Table had said that she wasn't regular and systematic, but again, in the court, looked at that and said, well, actually she was, and it didn't matter that the nature of her casual employment was ad hoc, in that she might have a shift 1 week but not the next. It was that there was a consistency of the expectation of the shift.
She assumed that she had a job.
So which does mean it's very unlikely, and it's only in a small set of circumstances you're really only going to ever get that true casualisation.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you think about, well, your Bed Bath & Table is a good example, but you think about the teenagers and the students who just have one shift a week somewhere, and they're all casuals. But they rely on that one Sunday shift. They always know they're on that Sunday or whatever it is, and if they don't turn up to work, they'll be disciplined or sacked. So the employer expects them to turn up to work as well. And in those circumstances, what the court is saying is that that is other than casual employment, which is important when it comes to entitlements, both under the National Employment Standards and in Mr. Rosado's case, obviously you've got an overarching enterprise agreement. That's really the first leg of the decision, which As I said before, I don't think he's that controversial because it really does follow on from Skeen. That's precisely what the court said in Skeen, and it's the approach that was actually adopted before Skeen as well. Skeen wasn't a departure from the accepted legal reasoning and has been adopted by the full bench of the Commission since. But I think the real new law here is about payment and this issue of double dipping. So, having clearly established that despite the words in his contract, Mr. Rosado did have every characteristic of being other than a casual employee, so being a permanent employee, the other key issue is then what does that mean for the payment of his entitlements, like personal leave, etc.? He was paid a casual loading, wasn't he?
He was, and indeed, as I mentioned before, Alice, he had six contracts over the period, and so the court looked at what those contracts said and how they characterised the payments of Mr. Rosado's hourly rates. And the court was satisfied in this case that the first three of Mr. Rosado's contracts had actually stipulated an express provision that allowed for the casual loading payment in lieu of those entitlements that he's not otherwise entitled to get.
So what did it say? Like it actually went through and said annual leave is a number, didn't it?
It did. It proportioned a percentage of the payment of that loading to the annual leave, to the personal leave. And so very clearly there, the court was satisfied that the parties and WorkPac in particular had turned its mind to establishing that, yes, there was a casual loading and that that was paid in lieu of and because of the nature of his engagement being casual. Interestingly, in the fourth, fifth and sixth contracts, the wording varied and there was an inference drawn by the court that the fourth contract could quite easily, you could get to by looking at a schedule that there was a casual loading, but certainly by the fifth and the sixth contract, it wasn't clear on the face of the contract, the notice of commencing employment, that there was a casual loading. Interestingly, Justice White, who was one of the judges deciding this case, took a very pragmatic view again, Alice, and said, well, I can see that it's not expressly stated as having that casual loading incorporated into the payment, but I also understand by virtue of the wording, and there was general wording around may include penalties and casual loading, that it was taken that would have indeed included the casual loading. So again, this is not contentious. It was accepted by the court that WorkPac was intending to compensate Mr. Rosado for the casual nature of his engagement, but then looked at that and said, well, notwithstanding that, and when certainly WorkPac tried to say, well, then we can offset that casual loading against any entitlements should you deem that he is entitled to entitlements, that those NES entitlements, the court said no.
Yeah, and that's the really striking thing, right? So he's got a contract that says you're paid a 25% casual loading. That casual loading is made up of, and it lists out in the contracts where it did do this, where it lists out the entitlements, it apportions part of that 25% loading. So that's all tick, did that right. But they also had a set-off clause in that contract. And in basic terms, a lot of HR people will be familiar with the set-off clause. It's a clause that says you're being paid this amount to set off any other entitlements that you may be owed. That is, it's a clause to prevent double dipping. We're paying you X so that we don't have to pay Y and Z because they're incorporated in X. Usually an employer would consider that that's enough to protect them for an underpayment for this type of claim for entitlements. But WorkPac relied on that. They ran that argument and it simply didn't work. And this is really interesting reasoning.
And they did this because of for this reason. What the court said was, if you think about it, and I make the analogy of two gates or paddocks. You have the gateway into that permanency, that other than a casual characterisation. And once you become a permanent employee, you become entitled to those NES entitlements, be it annual leave, personal leave, the right to be paid or take public holidays. And so what the court said was, we understand that you've got a set-off clause, but you can't actually set off for an actual title entitlement against an actual entitlement that the employee would otherwise have had had he been recognised at that stage throughout the employment to be a permanent employee.
And so it's like a distinction, isn't it? It is. So annual leave is a payment, but it's also the right to be absent from work.
To take that leave, yeah. As opposed to
without
the
loss
right,
of pay.
That's right, the right to a payment for a penalty or overtime.
Which you could offset.
Although it wasn't an issue in this case, but which was clearly offset in the contract. Yeah. So that's the distinction, and that brings us to the conundrum about the issue now at large, because this was all conceptualised in the Skeen case, Alice, and the Skeen case is different to Rosato because Mr. Skeen didn't have that 25% loading distinguished as a separate entitlement in his payment. But what the legislature or the government did at the time, just following the WorkPac and Skeen case, is they introduced a regulation on the 18th of December of 2018.
Which was supposed to fix this issue, wasn't it?
To do exactly that. And so again, WorkPac sought to rely, and they said, "Well, if you're not with us on the set off, then we seek to rely on Regulation 2.03A." And if I could just go through that regulation, and I should say this, the court agreed. The court said yes. Regulation 2.203A does apply or would apply, and you're entitled to rely on it. But in order to do so, you have to meet each of the threshold factors in that regulation, and that was establish that a person is employed on the basis that they were a casual employee, that the employer pays that person an amount, a loading amount, that is clearly identifiable as an amount to compensate them for not having those NES entitlements during the period of employment, and recognising that during all or some of that period of employment, they may actually be other than a casual employee for the purposes of the National Employment Standards, then if the person makes a claim to be paid an amount in lieu of one or more of those relevant NES entitlements, then the employer is entitled to offset or seek to offset against that entitlement. And so that's in the regulations of the Fair Work Regs. But what the court found was that Mr. Rosato did not make a claim for an amount in lieu of his NES entitlement. He made a claim
for his NES entitlement.
Yeah. And so that regulation wasn't applicable.
Doesn't help.
Which begs the question, what work does that regulation have to do? And I think it's just an...
Absolutely not.
it was not intended. I can, absolutely say hand on heart, I don't think it would
Someone will be tearing their hair out.
Been intended as that was the effect. But, of course, this is what the federal court does. Yeah. It looks at the wording. And
it's not ridiculous. When you pick it apart, we all might say, well, that's unfair. But the reasoning is quite sound, because the court says, hey, annual leave and personal leave are a double-barreled entitlement, if you like. It's yes, there's a payment involved, but actually the whole point of those entitlements is to allow employees, in the case of annual leave, to take some rest and recreation and have some time off, and in the case of personal leave, to protect them in circumstances where they're sick or they need to care for someone, so that they can be absent from work without loss of pay. And the court says, how can you possibly pay an amount in lieu of the ability to take time off? It doesn't make sense. I can give you an amount of money, but Christy, if I don't actually give you the time off to enjoy your holiday, then I'm not giving you the entitlement under the Act.
Yeah, you've passed through the gate and into that permanent space. So what are we supposed to do then?
Yeah.
The question I think employers should be asking themselves is why they have casual employees in the first place.
Yeah.
What are they actually going to be gaining by having people on as casuals if they are rostering them? Let's unpick that assumption.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because the whole time... I've worked in this field a long time, and people are always assuming that, oh, I'll have a casual to do that because them being a casual somehow gives me some kind of benefit. But I say, well, what benefit? Okay. Do they give you a benefit from paying redundancy when you need to get rid of them? Well, no, not if they're regular and systematic.
does it stop you from having to pay annual leave and sick leave to these people? Well, no, if they have an ongoing expectation of work, and if they're regular and systematic in light of this decision, well, clearly no. They've got the entitlement to actually have the time off without loss of pay. So, in fact, you're paying them under an award, you're paying them 25% more, yet you have to give them both entitlements, double dipping in essence. Does it protect you from unfair dismissal? Well, no, it doesn't either. An employee who's casual, who you call casual, can still access unfair dismissal rights, provided that they're regular and systematic. So what I'm urging people to do is really have a think about it. Don't just jump automatically to the conclusion that someone who comes in once a week or someone who comes in 3 days one week, 2 days the next week needs to be casual. They don't. And I question, in light of this decision, what actual benefit you are getting out of that as an employer, given that they are more expensive and that there are these hairy liabilities that you're going to have to address at some point.
And it may be that it's legitimate or it makes business sense to start a relationship as a casual relationship.
Yep.
But it does require you to, you know, review regularly that relationship and to be diligent with actually looking at how that relationship is going.
Because it's fluid, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Is it ad hoc? Is it truly ad hoc? Or are you starting to get a pattern of that permanency by virtue of that regular rostering, by virtue of the employee, you know, having an expectation of ongoing and indefinite employment. And so certainly you can commence a relationship as casual, but it doesn't mean therefore that it will ever be the case or it will be the case forever. And I think that then brings in a neat finishing point, which is the work of casual conversion clauses in awards.
Yeah, that's interesting, yep.
And potential legislative reform that we might see around this space.
So awards do have casual conversion clauses. So after 6 months, that option needs to be presented to casual employees. In my experience, generally speaking, when that occurs, it is more often than not that the employer says, no, thanks very much. Quite happy taking my 25% more. I'll stay like I am. And the real issue for me with that is, well, what does an employer do? I mean, technically you could say, well, I'm sorry, there's no further role for you. The only role here is for a permanent employee. That brings with it its own issues, obviously, but that is an option. But it's very difficult, you know.
Yeah, you do need, and indeed, trying to rely on that if the employee does say, no, thanks, I'm happy with the extra 25% loading in my pocket, is all well and good until they've finished their employment and then they seek to argue.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, I was actually permanent and now I'd like my entitlements on top.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
it's like an ideal world where you would say, okay, you can stay casual, but please sign this waiver and indemnity should you down the line want to sue me for your various other entitlements.
I guess
sadly we can't do that though, can we, Krista?
No, we can't. I guess the one thing that, and I've spoken to a number of clients over the last couple of days about this, is the question they've asked is, does it give us some sort of, you know, benefit to rely on that at least the parties have turned their mind to, and in this case, the employee, to actively, you know, turning their mind to the fact that they would like to remain as a casual employee? And the answer is, look, at the end of the day, that the authority in the WorkPack and Rosato and Scheme cases is that no, it won't give you any benefit. Because again, as you said earlier, that the court will always look to what exists, you know, in the formation of that relationship and then how it plays out and how it is in practice.
It's not a fix. Quite often we get, and not an easy fix, pardon me, quite often we get these court decisions and we can look at it and analyse it and say to clients, well, we've drafted this clever clause or this policy or this way that you can manage it such that we can fix this issue for you. In this particular case, I think there are some really smart management things that you can do, because this is down to auditing and review of your employment structures on an ongoing basis such that you can avoid this liability.
Yep.
But otherwise, this is a legislative fix, isn't it?
It is. It is. But some of those practical steps that you can do in addition to auditing is, you know, and being aware of
what your liability is. Remember, yeah. there's a statute yeah. of limitations that yeah. applies as well, which means that
an employee could bring a claim up to 6 years, you know, post the action being taken or them the 6 years of their employment. But, you know, really ensuring that when you do engage a casual, that you do in a manner that is irregular and uncertain and intermittent. So you will probably, and this is the thing, it reduces the flexibility of the employer.
It does.
To be nimble and to say, well, we can do it by virtue of having a casualised workforce. Mm. And in this environment, in coming out of a COVID pandemic that we see ourselves in, the last thing business wants and our, you know, employers want is to be less flexible.
That's right.
But it returns to what you said of, you can still be flexible with a permanent part-time employee. Just understanding how to manage that with, you know, consultation and rosters is the key.
Yeah. But I think in the end, it's over to the government and hoping for a legislative fix on this one. I think in particular in relation to claims going forward, because the exposure here, I mean, the implications for the labour hire industry are enormous. So I'm hoping that there'll be a legislative fix in terms of the past, in terms of liability for back payments. Going forward, we may not have that legislative fix, but at the end of the day, going forward, at least if we know the risks, we're able to, as you say, put in place some practical steps, know your business, know the structure of your workforce, and be alive to the issues.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Thanks, Krista.
Thanks, Alice.